Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Who will take home Oscars on Sunday night? For some cinema fans, watching the award ceremony is nearly as satisfying as watching the year's best performances. My guests today are back on Think after having seen just about all of the most important films of 2010, and they join us to talk about why those movies were nominated, who deserves to win, and how the politics of Hollywood might play into who takes home the gold statues. Stephen Becker writes about film for the Art and Seek segment for KERA's Art and Seek. Chris Wagner is film critic for the Dallas Morning News, and Christopher Kelly is the Fort Worth Star-Telegram's film critic. Guys, once again, welcome back.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us back.
So it's been 2 years now that we've had 10 films nominated for Best Picture. Does that make it harder, or are the two or three most obvious contenders still that obvious?
I think the top five contenders are the ones that have director nominations. But yeah, I mean, it's still sort of Social Network versus King's Speech at this point. I think we all agree on that. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. And I think your point is right on the money on that. There's 10 films nominated, but there's five directors nominated, and you can sort of subtract from there fairly certainly, okay, these are the five, you know, real contenders.
I've become a big fan of the 10 nominees because I know a lot of people think it dilutes the brand and it makes a Best Picture nomination not as important as it used to be. But I like that it allows for things like The Kids Are All Right or Winter's Bone, which I didn't especially like. But it's nice to see those movies that never in a million years would have gotten the attention that they're getting get attention with the 10 nominees. So I kind of dig it.
Yeah, I like it too. I mean, I don't think they all have a chance, but it's nice to see them all listed. And sure, I think it's a money grab on the part of Hollywood and the studios, but, you know, that's what Hollywood does. And it's still fun, like Christopher was saying, to see some films get mentioned and get honored that otherwise probably wouldn't.
Well, and the whole point of this in the first place was to hopefully draw in a larger audience for the telecast, you know, and because there's more films that, you know, you cast a wider net, more people will be interested in these movies. And I think from a viewer standpoint, that's a positive, too.
And what about Anne Hathaway and James Franco this year as co-hosts? I read somewhere that it was supposed to be sort of an edgier take on things. Do you think that's how it'll play out?
I think it'll be the exact opposite. Yeah. I think there's no way that they're going to be edgy because those are all their buddies in the crowd, you know, which, I mean, that happens to a degree when you have a comedian on there, but there's a different expectation, you know, and I don't think the crowd's going to be nervous like they were when Chris Rock or Jon Stewart or somebody like that is hosting.
Ricky Gervais.
Oh, my gosh. They need a break after Ricky Gervais anyway.
Don't you think there's something a little painfully contrived about having Anne Hathaway and James Franco? It's like someone got into a lab and said, who are the two sexiest, edgiest young actors who will look good together and we can make them be funny and quirky? I have low expectations for those two.
Wasn't James Franco going to sing at one point, and then they decided that really wasn't a very smart idea? And they,
like Rob Lowe?
I guess. I don't know. He never doesn't strike me. I like James Franco a lot. He just never struck me as the man with the golden pipes.
Though when Anne Hathaway did that number with Hugh Jackman a couple of years ago, she acquitted herself pretty well.
I think that's how she got the gig, honestly. They saw that and said, oh, we can put this to use.
So James Franco is nominated for Best Actor. Is he in the top couple of contenders?
No.
I thought he was amazing. I thought he carried the whole
did.
Film.
That was my number one movie of the year, but that was a different show. yeah, I thought he was fantastic. It's Colin Firth at this point, and I just don't see anybody else.
Now, as I recall, we had very different opinions in this crowd about The King's Speech.
Yeah, I don't think they're I think we're sort of on a continuum, and I'm sort of in the middle of the continuum, so I will let the two extremes of the continuum speak first.
So you loved it,
Stephen? I'll be the, yes, I always play the role of the King's Speech champion. I just, you know, but
it is a very public broadcasting friendly sort of story.
It is, and also, you know what, I think almost more importantly, it's a very Oscar friendly story. I mean, this is certainly the Oscar-iest of all movies out there. I mean, you've got all of the elements. You've got a guy who's fighting through a personal hardship. It's set during World War II. It's got a lot of British actors in it. I mean, they really got the Oscar checklist out when they
like
were making
this movie. Helena Bonham Carter has to be in the movie.
Helena Bonham Carter's in it. It has, you know, sweeping vistas. It's sort of like everything that you could ask for. So maybe I was sucked in by that. I don't know. But I also thought it was extremely well acted, and it told a story that I just was really drawn into. So, I mean, it's a fairly simple movie, but I thought they did everything that they aimed to do very well.
There's something a tad hypocritical in the Academy wanting to be edgy and, you know, Anne Hathaway and James Franco, and we're going to have our hippest, youngest broadcast ever. And then they want to give Best Picture to this movie that is so stodgy. You know, I mean, this wouldn't ruffle a feather anyone's cap. It's a nice movie. I found it really a little bit tedious ultimately. And I was a little surprised when I discovered it really is about the king's speech. Like, it's just about, you know, his speech impediment. And I guess I just didn't take that sort of emotional thematic leap that Stephen took, where it becomes about something much bigger. I just felt like I was kind of watching a guy overcome a problem. And it just felt very small to me.
Christopher used the word that I always use when describing this movie, which is nice. I think it's a really nice movie. I think it's really well put together. I like the friendship story. I like the performances. I think it looks good. I just think it's very retro, and I think that is one reason why it's going to win, especially compared to The Social Network. I'm not sure how many Academy voters are really into social media. I'm not sure if they really know exactly what's going on in this movie, and I think it's more now, and I don't think the Academy will ever be accused of being now.
So maybe Aaron Sorkin could win for Best Screenplay?
Sure.
I think he will. I mean, I think partly because the name Aaron Sorkin, but also because it's definitely the flashiest of the screenplays, I think, and the way the dialogue works, and it's very recognizable as being from his pen.
They'll find ways to give The Social Network the respect it deserves, and I think David Fincher might actually pull out Best Director. But this does seem to be the King's Speech's night. And I think actually the King's Speech is going to end up getting a lot more Oscars than anybody expects. I think it's going to start sweeping in a lot of the smaller categories. Mm-hmm. I think it has a shot for Best Supporting Actor and Actress. I think Monday morning, I think a lot of people are going to be surprised by how many Oscars it ended up winning.
Well, it's got 12 nominations, right?
Mm-hmm. I think Fincher will win. He's going to be my pick for director. I think they want to throw some kind of sop to some bigger sop to the movie, just because they know how many people like it and it made so much money. And Fincher's been around for a while. Tom Hooper won the DGA, Directors Guild Award, which really kind of shocked me. King's Speech is actually not my favorite Tom Hooper movie. The Damned United is, which came out last year. It's a great movie about a soccer coach played by Michael Sheen, which I highly recommend.
Can I continue bashing the King's Speech?
Please.
We've got an hour.
If we're talking Best Actor, though, and these are some really interesting nominees where the actors really carried the show. James Franco, 127 hours. He's the only one on the screen for 90 minutes. Jesse Eisenberg in The Social Network takes this utterly unlikable figure and makes you care about him. You're fascinated by him. Jeff Bridges, a great, you know, showy, old-fashioned performance in True Grit. And Javier Bardem, I didn't particularly care for Beautiful, but that is an intense, serious performance. Colin Firth, I don't know. Nice is about the best I can come up with it. I think it was the least interesting of those five performances, and he's going to win. It's without a doubt, he's the slam dunk of the night.
I think that role is more difficult than maybe you give him credit for, because I feel like when you are an actor and in a way you can't spit out what you're thinking, so much of it has to be read across your face. And I felt like you could really read the frustration that must be inside, you know, a person who can't speak to, you know, or say what they
want
to say.
But it's the kind of performance that you can see it. You know, it's like the old Dustin Hoffman in Rain Man. You can tell it's great acting. You know, there's
like acting with a capital A.
Yeah.
Then why is Christian Bale? Why should he win in the category that he's inevitably going to win?
Don't get me started on Christian Bale.
But I'm just saying, he's going to win for the same reasons that you're
They always seem to respond to these very clearly showier performances. And Christian Bale's another one where I think, you know, what Jeremy Renner does in The Town is so much more subtle and interesting. And who else is in the support? John Hawks, all those guys, Mark Ruffalo. But it's going to end up going most likely to the showiest performance.
What about Christopher Nolan? Are anyone surprised that he wasn't nominated for Best Director for Inception?
Yeah, I was pretty surprised, especially since Steve and I have talked about this before. It's, if anybody is responsible for that movie's vision, it's the director. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed very odd that he was the one that got the shaft for Inception, which doesn't have a chance to win Best Picture. I'm glad to see it get nominated. So yeah, I was a little bit floored that he didn't get nominated. I was also floored that Danny Boyle didn't get nominated for 127 hours, given how many other nominations, big nominations, that got Best Picture and Best Actor, especially.
I have a piece writing on the Star Telegram that talks a little bit about Christopher Nolan in the context of Toy Story 3. And I think on some level, for both Toy Story 3 and Inception, there's a resistance from Hollywood for these movies that where the effects are the stars, where they're created mm-hmm. inside of computers. In Inception, you know, those effects are bigger than Leonardo DiCaprio. In the case of Toy Story 3, which I think is the best of the 10 nominated movies, the actors, which make up the largest portion of the Academy, don't want to acknowledge that a movie that features no actors, just features right. voice work, is the best of the year. And I think you're going to keep seeing that. You're going to keep seeing directors like Christopher Nolan get snubbed. You're going to keep seeing Pixar, which deserves a Best Picture Oscar, not a Best Animated Picture Oscar. A Best Picture Oscar is not going to get it.
So is Pixar supposed to take the nomination as the award? Like, this is sure. big well, enough to have been nominated?
And it'll win Best Animated mm-hmm. Movie because it almost always does. So, but yeah, in that case, the being in the top 10 is its Oscar win in that category.
But we talked about this before. It's like Pixar has done the most vibrant, cutting-edge, interesting work over the last 5 years. Boy, talk about
10 years.
Overdue. 10 years, yeah.
And I think that they can console themselves with the giant piles of money that are piling up at Pixar's headquarters. But I think you're right. I mean, I think the nomination sort of is the award for them. And in a weird way, I think, you know, how excited can they be about winning the Best Animated Movie when it's like, they may as well name that the Pixar Memorial Oscar. You know?
But then, you know, it's so interesting because you have How to Train Your Dragon, which I didn't see, but I understand it's not a Toy Story 3 in terms of its quality. And then The Illusionist, which is a totally different kind of movie, totally different audience. It's almost not fair to put that film up against two blockbuster kid movies.
The Illusionist is the one that really should feel good about being nominated, where its nomination is its victory because it's a much smaller film. It's a much more traditional film. It's hand-drawn. It's based on an old Jacques Tati screenplay, for God's sake. So I think it's a lovely film, and I really enjoyed it. In fact, one of the animators, Justin Hall, just moved to Dallas.
We had him on the show, his wife Fiona.
Yeah, great guy. Mm-hmm. I think The Illusionist should be very happy to be in that top three. That's a real coup for that movie.
And the irony there is that the movie that's going to win is the one of those three who absolutely doesn't need the Oscar for anything.
Well, what do you think? I mean, is there any better way to handle? There didn't used to be an animated feature category at all, right? Until about 10 years ago.
Yeah,
I think the Pixar movies certainly. When you're talking about Up, Ratatouille, Toy Story 3,
Incredibles,
Wall-E. All these things were winners mm-hmm. in the animated film category. I think they've sort of outgrown the category. I mean, they really stand head and shoulders above just about anything else Hollywood's putting out there. I would make the case that Toy Story 3 is better than Social Network, better than King's Speech, better than True Grit.
I think you could make that case. I wouldn't necessarily agree, but I mean, I do agree that year in, year out, they make the most consistently great movies, not animated movies, just movies.
Will that bias change, do you think, over time? I just saw a trailer for some kind of movie about a 13-year-old kid or something who travels into space, or I don't know. But
I think you've described about half the movies coming out
this
year. I know,
but the animation looks so real. It looks like a real kid. Now the background is sort of very different, but shouldn't we acknowledge that it's great artistry to create something that looks like real life and maybe can do things that human actors can't do?
But again, when the human actors are making up the largest portion of the Academy, and when they're worried about work, I mean, that's what this all comes down to, is wanting to make sure that they still have jobs, you know.
Christopher Kelly is with us from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, Chris Wagner from the Dallas Morning News, and Stephen Becker from KERA's Art and Seek. We'll continue our discussion of the 2011 Academy Awards in just a moment. You're welcome to join us by calling 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, a multidisciplinary program that allows you the intellectual freedom to design your own master's degree. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
I need to do something substantial in order to get the attention of the clubs.
Why?
Because they're exclusive and fun, and they lead to a better life.
People want to go on the internet and check out their friends, so why not build a website that offers that friends, pictures, profiles? I'm talking about taking the entire social experience of college and putting it online.
The site got 2,200 hits within 2 hours.
22,000.
This idea is potentially worth millions of dollars.
Millions?
You stole our website.
They're saying we stole the Facebook.
I know what it says.
So did we?
My husband is, well, he's required to speak publicly.
I have received
Perhaps you should change jobs.
And what of my husband with a king? My husband has seen everyone.
Insert them into your mouth. Enunciate.
He hasn't seen me. I can cure your husband, but I need total trust. What was your earliest memory?
I'm not here to discuss personal matters.
Well, why are you here then?
Because I bloody well stammer!
This marks 24 hours of being stuck. I've been chipping away. Want to keep warm, anything? I have about 150 milliliters of water left, which should keep me alive till tomorrow night, if I'm lucky. So that's it. Mom, Dad, I haven't appreciated you as I know that I could. I love you guys, and I'll always be with you.
Three clips from three of the films nominated for Best Picture this year. You heard 127 Hours, before that, The King's Speech. And first, you heard The Social Network. You're listening to Think on KERA.org. My guests this hour are film writers Stephen Becker, Chris Wagner, and Christopher Kelly. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-800-933-5372. By the way, I just learned today, courtesy of Jeff Whittington, that the twins The Social Network were played by the same guy.
Same guy.
We've come a long way from, like, Haley Mills and The Parent Trap. I had no idea.
The Winklevi.
They were played by the same guy, but there's, like, a little, like, sort of asterisk there.
There was a body double.
There was a body double who I think did some actual acting or something.
And some rowing, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they somehow, like, superimposed the face onto the other guy. So I guess that guy was acting from the neck down.
That was a really good performance, though.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can, because those guys actually had, the Winklevi had different personalities. One of them was much more aggressive, and the other one was much more willing to wait and see. And so I thought it wasn't like you were just watching two identical people on screen. I thought that was actually one of the best elements of that film.
I really like that line where the one who, I can't remember which one is more aggressive, but says, it's time to use the considerable resources at our disposal, you know. Somehow they were interesting to watch, even though they were kind of spoiled rich kids who were used to getting whatever they wanted.
Right.
I'll go through the emails here a little bit. Julian writes, in a time-honored Academy tradition, Colin Firth will win because he should have won last year.
I think that's actually, Christopher and I vastly disagree about A Single Man. I thought it was a really beautiful film. And I agree with the emailer that he was better in A Single Man than
I concur on
he
that point
is
as well.
In King's Speech.
Yeah, just echoing what you... I know we talked about A Single Man and our takes on it last year, but you're right. And I kind of view like his performance in The Single Man as preparation work for his performance in The King's Speech, because he had to do a lot of the same things as far as just sort of conveying emotion without actually speaking.
I'll also say that I think Bridges is better in True Grit than he was in Crazy Heart.
Since I have you three experts in front of me, maybe you can understand how it works that someone is nominated for Best Actor or Best Supporting Actor, Best Actress or Best Supporting Actress. I thought Hailee Steinfeld could easily have done a Best Actress. Is that because she's 13 that they couldn't possibly nominate her for that?
It's not the age so much. A lot of it has to do with where the studio wants to position their candidates. They thought that she would have a better chance going against other supporting actress candidates, and I think they're right, actually. The classic example of the weirdness of this for me is Timothy Hutton winning for Ordinary People as Best Supporting Actor when he was basically that movie. I mean, so who is the lead in Ordinary People? Donald Sutherland? No, of course not.
Well, and in a way, I think something like The Kids Are All Right, you truly have co-leads with Julianne Moore and Annette Bening, and for some reason they picked, you know, that Annette Bening was the lead. And to me, that, to your point too, Chris, that's almost like when Brokeback Mountain was out, you know? I mean, those are basically two lead performances, and it does come down to the studio deciding who they want to push in which category.
It's got to be hard to be the one who
doesn't get picked for.
Well, unless you get pushed into the category that you have a better shot of winning, you know. I think they just want the Oscar all the same.
Let's go to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. Jeff in Tyler. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. Hey, this is a great discussion. I would say that it's probably less exciting than watching the King's Speech, though. It's really a heady kind of movie. I really enjoyed seeing a bit of history, seeing some, even the history of medicine as speech pathology develops. I have a sister-in-law, a speech pathologist, that's a pastor's wife, and she's seen it about four times in spite of the vulgarity. She's taken all her friends to see it, people in her that are in her group in the school system where she works. And it's just exciting to see bridging that gap. And, of course, the acting was great. I also enjoy – I think it's radical in that it's nice. You guys brought that word in. How many nice movies have there been that are really well acted also, that aren't just, corny, but played seriously?
Jeff, I really appreciate your call. I think you guys may be very happy on Sunday night. We'll find out. Thanks very much.
Well, with all due respect to Jeff, I just don't – when people say to me, you know, oh, this is a great movie for, you know, speech pathologists – or when they say, oh, this is a movie that, you know, we really can use as an educational tool, or it'll really, you know, it provides so much insight into X or Y or Z, my eyes just start to glaze over. I mean, it's just a little tedious to me. Like, I want a movie that has, flesh and blood and excitement, and give me Black Swan, you know, give me something out of control and over the top, but at least has some vitality and can't be taught in middle school, you know?
And I almost wonder if something like The King's Speech, as much as I personally liked it as a film, if it wouldn't be better as a play, you know,
right,
where you really were, you had that intimate setting of being in a live theater situation, maybe one day they will, you know.
I will say that back in November, December, whenever it was, before it started sweeping all the Guild Awards, Becker came up to me and said, King's Speech is going to win Best Picture. So I got to give it up for my
the,
boy
the visionary amongst us.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on from The King's Speech because there are a lot of other movies to talk about. Nancy in McKinney writes, I would love to see an Oscar category for voice actors in the animated films.
Yeah, I think that's a good argument. I think the resistance to it is that the Academy thinks to themselves, well, it's only 3 or 4 days of work for most of these people. Is that really worth an Oscar? But I agree. I would give it this year to Ned Beatty as Lotso the Bear in Toy Story 3.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Have you guys seen all of the foreign language films?
I've seen 2 of them.
I trump you. I see 4.
Ooh.
All right.
Well, that's a few more than I've seen. I tried, and I have to say, I tried watching Beautiful last night, and I just couldn't make
it. It's a
it
tough
all
one. It's relentlessly bleak, and Bardem that's a heroic piece of acting by Bardem, but that's a pretty tough movie. I saw Beautiful and I saw Outside the Law.
Beautiful's in English and Spanish. Are there subtitles for the Spanish?
There's other languages,
yeah,
too,
Chinese,
if I'm
too.
Not correct. It's really sort of
polyglot mostly in Spanish.
Beautiful suffers from.
What's it about?
A filmmaker. It's about a guy who's. Discovers he's dying of cancer. He's sort of a bit of a scoundrel, and he's trying to raise his kids. And
he's not just dying; he talks to the dead as well.
And the movie just sort of reeks of that kind of ponderous. Let's take this is about life and death and big themes. It is it's by Alejandro Iñárritu González. I may have just mangled his name.
I think he just flipped the two.
I'm sorry, Alejandro
González
Iñárritu.
Yeah,
sorry, dude.
And he directed Babel and.
21
grams. This is the first movie he's done in a linear fashion, but I not my thing.
So. Me neither. Yeah, and this one wasn't written by Guillermo Arriaga, too. So you had he was the one that wrote Babel and liked to chop up the movie in a sort of weird way. But to me, with the line that runs through Iñárritu's movies is that he just expects a lot from the audience. He expects you to, the fact that you're sitting in the theater or watching it at home, that you're just automatically interested in the movie because you took the time to sit and watch it. And like, especially with something like Beautiful, I don't felt like he was paying back my attention very well. It was really dragging out and I wasn't much payoff along the way.
It ain't short either.
Yeah.
No?
The movie I'm betting on for Best Foreign Language Film is In a Better World, which won the Golden Globe. and I loved it. It's old-fashioned melodrama about this doctor and his kids, and it's about violence and social change. It's just a good, accomplished film. I think that's probably the one, though. Beautiful might eke it out if they feel like they need to give Bardem some sort of acknowledgement.
Well, and with him getting the nomination, that's what made me think, well, here's the thing that's nominated for multiple, you know, so maybe that's a feather in their cap.
I believe In a Better World is going to be at South by Southwest in Austin.
In a Better World will also be opening in April. I think Incendie, which is the Canadian entry, is also opening in April. And Dogtooth, which is a very strange but very compelling movie from Greece, is available on DVD.
I hear Incendie is fantastic. I was at Toronto last year. Not so much, Chris.
It's a little bit over the top for my tastes, also kind of wears its seriousness on its sleeve, much like Beautiful.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Jeff in Fairview. Hello, Jeff.
Oh, hi.
Hi. Go right ahead, please.
I had a question concerning Best Documentary. I was curious to see if any of y'all thought the Banksy exit through the gift shop had a actual chance of winning.
I was really excited that it got nominated. That was on my top 10. That's one of my favorite movies from last year. It just doesn't seem like an Academy kind of movie. It's very edgy, and it's very now, and it's very mischievous. So when it got nominated, my jaw dropped in pleasure. I'd love to see it win. I don't think it's going to. I think Inside Job, the documentary about the financial meltdown, is going to win, mostly just because it's so timely. And it's also a very, very well-done film. I also think Restrepo.
I love that movie. I didn't love it, but
I liked it.
It was great.
The movie about the Afghanistan war, I think that has a fairly good shot as well. But if Gift Shop won, hey, I would applaud in the office.
I feel like Restrepo has a really good shot of winning because a lot of times the Academy likes to award these documentaries that focus on a current event or, you know, a world event. And Restrepo, certainly being about the war in Afghanistan, I think has that in its favor. But I loved Exit Through the Gift Shop. And I have my fingers double-crossed that it will win because now, just as of this morning, the president, they first were saying that they weren't going to allow Banksy to accept the award if they won because he's this, like, anonymous guy, and they basically don't want somebody running up on stage with a chimpanzee mask and a hood on accepting an Oscar, which, to me, they are blowing it. If they don't want – I mean, what a great – you know,
you could go to Lady Gaga's costume.
Yeah, you talk about great opportunities for great television. That's it right there.
They could arrest him on stage, too. That would be
Yeah, I suppose. But I feel like if he wins, he's got to have something cooked up. And I would love to see the elaborate presentation that happens if Banksy actually wins. So that's why if you just want to see good television, I think you should vote for that one.
No Waiting for Superman. Were you guys surprised?
I was kind of disappointed. And also no Client 9, the Elliot Spitzer doc. I mean, those were both really strong, I thought. But I suspect the Inside Job kind of took that slot, that kind of, you know, American social issue slot, and deservedly so. I think Inside Job's fantastic. So Gasland is also a really interesting movie, which has a lot of North Texas connections because it explores the Barnett Shale and the fracking process to get natural gas. I haven't seen Wasteland, though. That's the other nominee.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go. We've got three Chris's, so let's go to a Steven in Dallas. Hi, Steven.
Yes, Chris, North Texas is lucky to have you.
Thank you.
And then I want to ask the guys, can you sell me on why I would see The Social Network? And I must add that I'm over 50.
Yeah, I mean, to me, The Social Network is really about ambition and friendship and the way that one trumps the other. It's just a really good human drama. I think it's what everybody says the King's speech is.
Chris, think it's kind of in the tradition of a Citizen Kane or, sure, or Giant or There Will Be Blood?
Yeah,
these
absolutely.
These are stories of sort of megalomania, American megalomania business. So I think as a 50-plus, young at 50, I'm sure, you would probably enjoy it in those regards.
It's sort of about a young man who sells his soul and realizes it too late. I don't know if that's actually what Mark Zuckerberg is. I've never met the man. But it's dramatically speaking, thematically speaking, I think that's where Social Network hits home to a wider audience.
It doesn't hurt that Jesse Eisenberg is like a dead ringer for Mark Zuckerberg either.
Yeah, and he's really good in the film, too.
Steven, do you have anything
to
add?
I was just going to say, I wouldn't be surprised if, as much as I like The King's Speech, if The Social Network was the film that in maybe 10 or 20 years from now, when we look back to the movies that were up for Oscars around this time, that's actually the movie that people still remember and are talking about and is still part of the discussion, whereas the King's Speech, I could see kind of coming and going, oh, here's a bunch of awards, and then maybe we don't hear so much about it later.
And that's interesting because one of the things that critics of The Social Network say is that it's too right now, it's too current, and that the King's Speech is more for all time. It has more universal themes. So that's what you're saying would actually be a very interesting turnout if it ends up to be the case, because it contradicts some of the conventional wisdom we're hearing now.
Well, when we're doing the 2021 Oscar countdown show, we'll have to be sure and revisit that.
God willing, we're all still here.
Hey, Chris, thanks for having me.
You know, the other thing about The Social Network is it really drives home how quickly social networking has become a big part of all of our lives. I mean, all of us are online professionally. We're also online personally. And it's just been a few years that this has been around, and it's gotten to the point that this thing really, you can't stay away from it.
So I wonder how many of the more veteran Academy members feel that way, and if they are plugged into Facebook. And
they have to be plugged in if they're in the media? And
not on Facebook.
No, and I think you underestimate how old some of these folks are. I mean, I read a New York Times story about a retired nun who was actually an Academy member because she used to be an actress, and she's this 80-year-old woman who sits in her convent and votes on the Oscars. You know, and there's a lot of people.
She's
like
voting for a nice movie.
She's voting for King's Speech, I bet. Black Swan's not getting any love there. So I think it's a graying group of people, and I agree with Chris wholeheartedly. I think a movie like The Social Network, they probably kind of turn their heads and go, "What's going on here?" You know.
My guests this hour are Christopher Kelly of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, Chris Wagner of the Dallas Morning News, and Stephen Becker of KERA's Art and Seek. We're talking about the 2011 Academy Awards. Love to hear what you think. Call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, a multidisciplinary program that allows you the intellectual freedom to design your own master's degree. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
I have a fight next week.
And after I win, I'm going to start making good money so you can live with me more days, okay?
Good luck, Daddy.
Don't hold your breath, Casey.
Bye, baby.
You pave streets, right?
Yeah, I do, and I'm a fighter.
I heard you were a stepping stone.
Oh, I mean, I had a few tough fights, but the next fight's going to show who I am.
Yeah, and he's going to lose that one, too. So move that sugar ass and give him a
hand. Don't disrespect her.
Mickey Ward is 31 years old. He's here because he needs the money.
Look at the size of that guy. He's got 20 pounds on me, Dickie.
You don't fight, nobody gets paid.
Mr. Cogburn?
What do you want, girl?
I'm looking for the man who killed my father. The man's name is Tom Chaney, and I need somebody to go after him.
What's your name?
My name is Maddie Ross.
Are you some kind of law?
I'm a Texas Ranger. I know Chaney. It is at least a two-man job taking him alive.
Marshal Cogburn? Can we depart this afternoon?
We?
I'm going with you.
He promised to feature me more this season.
Well, he should. You've been there long enough. And you're the most dedicated dancer in the company.
Our new swan queen, the exquisite Nina Sayers.
I'm Lily. You're gonna be amazing.
Watch the way she moves. Sensual. She's not faking it.
Seduce us! Attack it! Attack it! Come on!
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. You just heard their clips in order from The Fighter, True Grit, and then Black Swan. My guests this hour are Stephen Becker of KERA's Art and Seek, Chris Wagner of the Dallas Morning News, and Christopher Kelly of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. First question, is there like a scoring algorithm that adds extra points for a regional American dialect?
There should be at this point, yeah. Although I think they should start subtracting at a certain point, as much as every movie seems to be made about people in Boston these days.
Or Lowell, in this
or
case.
Lowell.
And I seem to recall, last time we talked, I sort of made some cracks about Black Swan, and you guys thought it was a better film than I did. Is Natalie Portman, Slate's been talking about this, a good actress, or does she just get cast in things that sort of work for her?
I think she's a really good actress, and I think she showed that in this. I mean, I thought she's been good in the past. I just thought in Black Swan she really upped her intensity level to a very, very high point and really showed me something.
Black Swan's an interesting case. It's not a performance with a tremendous amount of range, but it is incredibly intense and persuasive. And so you sort of balance that. Like, you look at someone like Annette Bening in The Kids Are All Right, or Nicole Kidman, who I thought was really superb in Rabbit Hole, really underrated. And they go on a really, really bit, you know, complex journey, whereas Natalie Portman's in that zone and turning the screw tighter and tighter. And I think they're really interesting contrast in terms of performances.
I haven't seen Rabbit Hole. It seems like just a really hard movie to watch.
It's not as hard as you might think.
Really?
I mean, it's a sad movie, but it's actually, in the end, I don't know if Chris, you agree with this. Did you see it, Stephen?
Yeah, I saw it, and I think what maybe you're going to say is that there's a little bit of hopefulness at the end, I felt.
Yeah,
it's a very small movie.
It is.
And I think almost would have been better served on HBO or as a made-for-cable television movie. But Kidman's tremendously good. I mean, I think a lot of us had written her off and thought, oh, God, her face is just frozen into this mask of inexpressiveness.
The Joan Rivers treatment.
Yeah. And yet here, there's a scene where she's in her station wagon watching this young boy, and I won't explain the relationship because it gives it away, but she's watching this young boy go off to a prom with his friends, and she just collapses emotionally in the car, and I thought it was unbelievably good screen acting.
Yeah, I agree. I thought Eckhart was very good too. I mean, it's really, for people who don't know, it's a movie about a couple that loses a child, but it's actually a very optimistic film, and I think that's why it's apparently hasn't connected with a lot of people, because I don't think a lot of people have seen it. But I think that's why it helps. It elevates above that level of grief and away from that, oh, my God, I can't look at this point of view.
And I think it sort of fits in a thread this year about, I feel like that there's a lot of the movies that are nominated, viewers are looking for reasons not to go see them. I think that's the same with 127 mm-hmm. Hours for sure. And I think it's the same with like the caller mentioned, with The Social Network. For whatever reason, we have these movies this year where people are a little bit scared to go see them, which I think is kind of great, because I think when you go to a movie, you should be opened up to something that maybe you wouldn't have considered earlier. But I think the message that I'd like to get across, especially with 127 Hours and Rabbit Hole, and even a movie like, well, with those two, anyway.
You can say King's Speech if you really need to.
No, that's, my mind went off another direction.
It's all about the King.
With those two movies, they're movies that look like they're just gut-wrenching on the surface. And they are to a degree. But if it were only that, people wouldn't, I don't think, like them as much as most people who actually have seen them do.
I think you can go there with Black Swan, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a very unnerving movie. And I've talked to people who have either said, I'm not going to see that movie, or I squirmed all the way through that movie, or why do I want to see this woman go mad?
Well, the other movie I was going to mention was Blue Valentine, which is also
we haven't talked about.
Yeah, it's also a very difficult movie to watch for those of you who haven't seen it. It's about this couple. It's basically about a couple breaking up, and but it's filmed actually out of order too. And so you start out seeing these people breaking up, and you're kind of thinking, well, so what? You know, why should I care? Well, as the movie unfolds, you start to see what they were like, you know, as younger people. And I think, I hate to say it, but I think a lot of people can relate to their story as far as what it's like to break up. So it's, again, a difficult movie to watch. And I think some people held it at arm's length because they heard that it You know, there was NC-17 for a while there, and, you know, they wanted to stay away from something like that. But it's another challenging movie that I think is, if you're willing to, you know, let go to it, it's really rewarding.
And that is a monster performance by Michelle Williams, if I can use my fighter accent for a second. She's really, really good.
As was Ryan Gosling, who didn't get nominated, but was also really good.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the phones now. This time we will speak with Scott in Irving. Hey, Scott. Okay, we do not have Scott, but we will go to Stuart in Arlington. Hi, Stuart.
Hi. You know, this is the first year where I've seen just a lot of different genres covered for Best Picture. It's like a really good, you know, you got your good Western and like the, you know, the boxing movie and everything. But even with all that and with as much as they nominate, do you guys feel like there's a movie that got criminally snubbed or maybe it was released way too early in the year for voters to look at?
But in my case, both, which is the Ghostwriter, Roman Polanski's movie, I thought deserved Best Picture Director. Particularly the supporting performances in that movie by Olivia Williams and Pierce Brosnan as this couple loosely based on Cherie and Tony Blair. I loved that movie, and it got great reviews and just didn't connect at the box office and seemed to get forgotten by the critics at the end of the year, I thought.
You know, it's funny. It's not a movie that I absolutely loved, but when I saw Secretariat, I thought it was going to make some noise in the Oscars. I thought Diane Lane might get nominated. I thought it might sneak in and get one of the feel-good movie Best Picture nominations, and it got nothing. It just vanished. And it wasn't one of my favorite movies of the year, but I did enjoy it quite a bit, and I was kind of surprised to see it just completely vanish from view. The performance that I wanted to see acknowledged somehow was Paul Giamatti in Barney's version. And I've said before, I just don't think the Academy really knows what to do with Giamatti. He didn't get nominated for Sideways. He somehow got nominated for Cinderella Man in a much smaller part. But I think he's maybe a little bit too close to the edge, maybe a little too grouchy in some of the roles he picks. But I really would have liked to see him sneak in and get a nomination.
I can't say I'm super surprised that this film didn't get any Oscar love, but I really liked I Love You, Philip Morris. Mm. And I thought it had two really strong performances from Ewan McGregor and Jim Carrey. And again, I'm not surprised because it's a sort of not Oscar-y movie at all. It's a hard movie to categorize, and people didn't really know what they wondered if it was about smoking or, I mean, just, it was just a hard movie to sell. And so that's why I'm not surprised that it didn't end up really making a lot of headway as far as award season goes. But it is a movie that, you know, if you haven't heard much about it, I think, you know, I know we talked about it the last time we were around here. I think it's certainly worth checking out.
Would it be weird for the Coen brothers to win Best Director for the least Coen brothers movie ever?
It's one of my favorite Coen brothers movies. I guess it is sort of un-Coen. We talked about this a little bit last time, I think. It's not quite as un-Coen-y as a lot of people are saying.
And the feat of it, I think, is it's the most sort of elegant, old-fashioned filmmaking they've ever done, but it's still imbued with their slightly off-kilter personalities. It's a striking movie. I'd actually think I'd vote for them if I were voting for Best Director.
Yeah, I love True Grit. It's one of my favorites, certainly.
We have an email here from Kyle who says, I'm a huge Nine Inch Nails Trent Reznor fan. He scored the Social Network soundtrack. Any thoughts on Best Movie Score?
I would love to see that him one. Win. I mean, that's a really haunting score that just permeates almost every scene of that film, and it's edgy. I mean, it is Trent Reznor.
If we're talking about best score, I mean, they have to give that to The King's Speech. I mean, it's just the kind of movie made to win the best score Oscar, you know.
I think
swelling, sweeping, heart-tugging strings, you know.
Yeah, I think with some of those categories, when you're talking about the larger Academy voting, you got to think about what name do they see on the list that just isn't recognizable name to them. And I think that may be as good a reason as any about why Trent Reznor may win. And I think it's also the reason why Hans Zimmer may win for Inception, which was another, I thought, pretty innovative score, even if he, you know, he's come out and said that he's kind of, that score sort of came out of another idea he did for another movie. But, you know, it was actually a really good year for movie scores.
And since we're talking King's Speech movement, every time I hear that cover of Radiohead's Creep, sung by that choir, I get chills. I just love that version of that song in Social Network,
Nancy says she was surprised that True Grit wasn't nominated for Best Score.
Oh, it wasn't eligible. They determined it wasn't eligible because Carter Burwell relied on too many existing pieces of music. So that's why that wasn't in there.
Huh. I did not know that.
I really, obviously Inception is not going to win. And it was sort of in the end kind of, you know, cheesy, I thought, in the way it resolved, but it's like so enchanting to watch. You really can't turn away from that movie.
Oh, I could have turned away from that.
Really? I just loved.
I thought, as much as I respect it, I thought the effects ultimately really overwhelmed the actors and the feelings. I just felt like I was watching something very mechanical and very cold. And I know that's the rap against Christopher Nolan, and I really thought he sort of fed into his worst critics with this one.
I think the thing I appreciated about Inception was that it certainly got to be the most talked about movie of the year. And it was absolutely the one movie that immediately after watching it, I wished that I could have run it right back. And I think a lot of people probably had that reaction because they were able to see how it all played out. And then they wanted to go back and see, you know, look for all the signs that they hope were planted along the way. And so I think there's something to be said for that.
I sort of did that. I saw it two straight nights or two screenings, and I went back and brought somebody else to the second screening and paid a little bit more attention to some of the things that were going on. Because the first time you're just trying to focus on everything that's being said.
Right.
Which could be seen as a drawback, I guess, that there's so much chat about exactly what's going on. I would also say that Inception is sort of the kind of movie that the 10 nominee field was created for. It made a lot of money, created a lot of discussion. I thought it had a good deal of artistry. I don't think it would get in a 5-film field. So I think it's good that, you know, one more argument for the 10-picture nomination system.
Well, I mean, the fact that you don't even think of mentioning one of the performances, and that's intentional. I mean, none of those performances are meant to be especially showy, but it's not the kind of movie, again, that the Actors Branch is going to rally around. You know, they don't necessarily look upon Marion Cotillard or Leonardo DiCaprio or Joseph Gordon-Levitt as having delivered especially important or memorable performances.
Do you guys have a favorite obscure category?
I pay pretty close attention to the cinematography category. I don't know if that's obscure or not, but I would love to see Roger Deakins win this year for True Grit. He's never won, which amazes me. This is his 9th time being nominated. He's done a lot of great films with the Coens and with others.
Was it the sweeping vistas or what did you like
about it?
The
sweeping vistas, the lighting. It just captured that, you know, Old West sort of gritty, grimy Old West feel, those shots with the snow coming down, that very first scene where it zooms in on that body and then up to the porch light is just mesmerizing to me. I think the scuttlebutt is that Wally Feister might win for Inception, oddly enough.
You know, I don't know that it's a particularly strong year in this category, but I always like the best original song category. For one, it's a good way to award a movie that maybe is a good movie that just is not going to win anything else. And also, I like it when they have somebody perform the songs on the Oscars. You know, it breaks up all the speech-making and award-giving a little bit. So if anything, I think that category provides a nice little speed bump in the telecast.
Last 10 seconds and last word goes to you, Christopher Kelly.
Oh, yeah. We're having an Oscar party hosted by DFW.com and the Modern Art Museum of Fort Worth and the Lone Star Film Society. Will be at the Modern in Fort Worth. Doors open at 6 p.m. It's free. I will be the host. Tons of free prizes. It's a lot of fun. Come dressed as an Oscar nominee. Costume contest.
Are you wearing a tux?
I'm plugging like crazy. I'll be in my tux.
All
yeah,
right,
black tie.
I'm just jealous because that means you're not going to have to write that night.
That
Thank
is correct.
You, Christopher no Kelly, Stephen Becker, and Chris Wagner. Guys, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
Thank
Chris.
You.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
The Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.